All right, you want to give us a count around there, Joel?
3, 2, 1.
Who's the best show here?
Tech Show!
Who's the best show here?
Tech Show!
All right, that's pretty good. That's the best one yet.
Pizza, pizza.
Yeah, I got to put on my good sweatpants.
Bingo! Showtime!
Well, you were making egg foo young in the kitchen. I was in the dining room having sushi.
It's a little thing Tech Show, and that's a fact. If you don't like the cats, you can stick it up your ass. Ain't no funny duddies that will link it bad. For the streaming, go direct to DLNGS.org. And the IRC channel is a LinuxLink.net. Bound Tech Show. Just sit right there, cause the calendar's just about to begin.
Welcome to episode 881 of the Linux Sling Tech Show. On the show tonight, we have Pat.
Rocking my new microphone and external audio card mic preamp.
And we have Joel.
Good evening.
And we have Joe.
Hello, hello.
And I'll let you guys get back to what you were talking about, because my heater's going, so.
Well, Joel pointed out this, Kickstarter for GK96S, which is a 96% keyboard, hot swappable keys, and it comes with keycaps and switches. And the switches, it says you can pick from blue, red, brown, or black, or you can pay $5 more and get yellow, silver, green. And they're all Gateron switches. And the price is $69 at the cheapest, but also another $22 shipping and handling, so it comes out to $91. And the other interesting thing about it is that you can buy Southpaw keyboards. And these mechanical keyboards are wired or Bluetooth, and the Southpaw just puts the number pad on the left-hand side instead of the right-hand side. And honestly, for a custom keyboard, that's still a good price, even though the Southpaw is a little bit more expensive.
And I'm trying to see where doesn't look like they changed the layout of the main keyboard on the Southpaw at all.
Nope. Just move the numpad and the accessory buttons.
One of those stupid things I see come up on freaking Facebook all the time. Cause hey, I'm a tech nut.
But $69 or even $91 for a completely customizable keyboard. Yeah, that's actually a really good price. Especially Bluetooth.
Mm-hmm. That's good stuff.
And it comes with keycaps already, which is, you know,
nice thing.
Big plus.
I was going to say, the nice thing with Bluetooth is that it'll pretty much work with anything from a regular Linux machine to a Windows machine to a Mac to even iPads and Android tablets and devices. It should work fine with all those.
Well, mine, I'm still not quite, because I got it, you know, secondhand, I'm not quite sure what's wrong with it. But if I'm letting it run on battery, so it might be a battery issue, but the Bluetooth drops out and then picks back up, maybe, and then drops out. But if I leave it plugged in, it's a bit more stable. And even over Bluetooth, if I leave it plugged in, it's a bit more stable. But I can also go wired mode. And that works really good.
See, now that's kind of what makes straight up Bluetooth keyboards only. Like I was looking for my wife has an iPad Pro. I'm gonna have the iPad Air, and both of those support both of the different Mac keyboard or iPad keyboards that Apple sells. But I ain't paying $300 for.
Keyboard? That's absurd.
One of them is that, and the other one is like $990 something, I think. But I don't really want to pay that for either.
Yeah, but a lot of your custom keyboards where you're picking the casing and the PCB and, you know, all the parts individually, right. You're really looking in that $300 or more range, depending on how custom you want to get.
Right, for the custom.
But that's mostly because it all gets made in small batches, right. And so you have to go in with somebody on a batch.
Correct. Yeah, it's the magic keyboard for the iPad Air or the iPad Pro 11-inch is $299. The Smart Keyboard Folio is $179, and just the Smart Keyboard itself is $159 for the iPad. And the only real difference, is that the Magic Keyboard actually has a trackpad on it as well. It's a little bit crazy. I'm probably not gonna buy any of those. But I will say the one nice thing about those is they are direct attached. They're not Bluetooth. Actually, the Smart Keyboard for the iPad 8th generation. I'm sorry, it was a different generation. Still, it's, you know, $150 to $300 is a little much.
That is pricey.
Yep. So one of the things I actually might look for is, let's see, there's a Logitech Simfolio, which has a built-in Bluetooth keyboard. That's a little bit better, about $120. So it's a case plus the keyboard. I'm trying to see. I might see if there we go. I'm looking at. I was trying to see if did they have anybody else that has ones that use the pins on the way they did the mechanical connection is there's like three metal connections right on the back of the tablet, and that's what the Apple ones use, so they're not Bluetooth. But Logitech has one that uses them too, but it's still about the same freaking price. It's ridiculous. But it's not like I use a keyboard that often with a tablet anyway, though. So, I mean, not other than I did buy the one that was from, but it's a little bit different for my Surface Pro 6. I have the keyboard. I bought that with it. But it was $150, but it's unlike the Apple version, it has the trackpad on too. So, not that I really care about the trackpad that much because I usually end up using a mouse with a, I'm going to say pretty much any device
unless
I have.
Unless you do like all night missile command.
Right, or something. So. And well, I don't want to say missile command. There is, I'm trying to remember the name of the missile command game.
Missile command?
No. There's a brand new version of it on the Android store, and it's tuned for touch, so it works fine with touch.
I'm sure if you search for Missile Command, it'll come up.
Yep, Missile Command Recharged is the name of the one on Android. And it's probably the same thing on iOS devices too, but it's really good, and basically you just tap where you want the missile to go. There's no cursor or anything.
Well, I got a couple of mechanical keyboards floating around at this point. I got this GK68S, which is the Bluetooth or wired. I've got a Logitech G613, which is either dongle or Bluetooth, depending on how you set it up. And that one works pretty good, but I'm not a real big fan of the Roamer switches. And the fact that the G keys, the gaming keys on the side, you can't reprogram them in Linux. And then I have a Red Dragon that I keep at work because my wife hates it because it's super clicky.
Mm-hmm.
But that one's completely wired. It's still fun to use.
Yep. Seeing the keyboard side, I haven't had a desktop in forever. I don't remember the last time I had a desktop PC.
Well, this GK68 is hooked up to my gaming laptop. then
right.
Yeah, the G613 is hooked up to my server, but that doesn't really move around, so. Of course, neither does my gaming laptop. Mm-hmm. But it's because it's got a 17-inch screen and a GTX 950 in it and two spinning disks and an SSD, so its battery life is a good 45 minutes.
Right.
So...
No. Go ahead.
It stays plugged in.
Yep. I still kind of like the old school Model M.
Yeah, that's PS2, isn't it?
No, it's before that.
Okay, serial?
Yep. I forget what the original IBM PC used, but that's it. But, a lot on the same lines in that it's hardware. I've been not watching a lot of videos on the new M1 Max, but I did see some stuff on Twitter where one of my favorite YouTubers, Clint Bassinger, otherwise known as LGR, he bought the M1. And even though it hasn't been optimized for the M1 chip, Premiere, he said it's working really well on the M1 Max, which means they did an amazing job with Rosetta 2, I guess. But I can't imagine how it's going to work once they finally get it optimized. But so now it's making me think more about picking up either the Air. Well, really, to be honest, they have the same chip, and you can pretty much get almost the same specs whether you want the MacBook Pro 13-inch or the iPad, MacBook Air, which I think is also like a 13-inch. I think the only real difference is the MacBook Pro has that stupid keyboard strip that Dan loves to hate.
Absolutely. Well,
it was a terrible
trash.
Idea. It is garbage.
So, if you don't like that, then you probably wouldn't go wrong just getting the MacBook Air with the M1 if you really wanted to try the M1. But what I'm hoping is that somebody figures out a way to run Linux on the M1 at some point. They will.
Eventually. It'll get harder once the ARM chips. Or does the M1 have the ARM chip?
Yeah, the M1. Well, M1 is Apple's laptop
version of
chip,
ARM, yeah.
Right, which is based on the A14 Bionic, which is the one that's in the iPad Air that I'll be getting. But we'll see. It's exciting times. And what I would like to see is I'd like to see other companies switching to ARM-based processors, maybe bringing Samsung bring out a laptop with Exynos, maybe. But
yeah, at least for a while, you're probably going to see both on the market, and something will dominate sooner or later.
Yep.
But for gaming right now, for gaming laptops, they're not going to go ARM anytime soon.
Yeah. I mean, we have already got ARM-based devices, technically, with the Pinebook Pro.
Right.
And Microsoft has been bringing, I think they're, they got a Surface device, that runs on ARM as well. And it's not as dumb as the original, Surface RT was.
Yeah, that was pretty stupid.
All they need is Unity and the Unreal Engine to export out into to support ARM, and they're to go, they're already ready to go, right?
There you go.
Yeah, never buy an RT device. Ever.
I'm gonna say, I don't think even Windows 10 supports the RT, if I remember, right?
No, you can't upgrade to 10, and a lot of that is size issues and the fact that, you know...
That's what she said.
Our RT is very specialized. Yeah, Windows 10 is just way too big.
Yep.
But yeah. RT was garbage when it came out, and it's still garbage now, and it's unsupported garbage now.
And at what some point, you gotta wonder though, will Intel switch to the ARM platform? Because it's not like they never did own ARM devices. They made the X-Scale
chip. They need to make some kind of change, and that would be a good change for them, considering how poorly how much they've gotten hit in the last couple of years.
Power consumption is a big deal, and the Intel chip just can't do it.
Well, there are so many fixes that slow down Intel processors because of security vulnerabilities. Now, I know it might not be the case with the newer processors, but there's a long period of time worth of processors that suffer from that issue.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So on to some fun. I caught up with Star Trek Discovery yesterday.
How is it?
Very, very good. I hesitate to want to really talk too much about the topics, especially the latest episode, because it's going to kind of blow the storyline if I do.
Don't spoil it. I'll wait till
it's
over.
Don't spoil it. Yeah.
I'll turn it on, you know, watch it for like 3 weeks and then shut it off.
I have to watch all the previous seasons.
Yep.
Yeah. But I've been watching old episodes of The Pretender and Big Bang Theory. I went through like most of the sixth. I made it all the way up through most of the sixth season of Big Bang Theory.
And I watched the first episode. I mean, I got several more to catch up with The Mandalorian, but I watched the first episode of season two.
I'm
freaking awesome! It was so good.
Yeah, yeah. So you watched the first episode and you saw Boba Fett.
I did.
Yeah, it's annoying that I'm on the third episode and that was it. There's just that one, like, 2 second shot of Boba and that's it.
Well, and his armor.
And his armor, but yeah, that was it.
Wait. Season 2, episode 1?
Yeah.
Wait.
Yes, sir.
Wait, what was the scene that you saw Boba Fett in?
At the very last end.
You see a grizzled guy standing there, and that's Temuera Morrison, who's playing Boba Fett, who played Boba Fett and Jango Fett in the sequels.
Oh, wait, was that the guy that had the sand person weapon on his back when he turned around?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Because yep. I was thinking, I don't remember seeing Boba Fett in his Mandalorian armor anywhere.
You didn't see
not
his Mandalorian armor.
Okay.
No. But you didn't see Boba in his armor.
Okay.
No, you right. saw the Marshal. What was his name? Gareth, I think? I don't remember.
They called him the Marshal.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about.
Spoilers, dude, spoilers. if you haven't watched it, but I was very pleased. Probably my favorite, other than the rest of the episode, my favorite, the child scene was the child on the speeder bike. That was pretty funny. He didn't have as many scene stealers in the first episode, I thought, but he had a couple.
Now, I'll tell you what. I love The Mandalorian, but in this season, so far, they've only had 3 episodes out, right?
Yep, that's
right.
And I'm like, man, every season, every episode was fantastic, but it did nothing to advance the story, right? I kept saying to my wife, I'm like, he's on side quests over here. He hasn't gotten to the main quest yet.
There's actually a couple of memes out there based on him being on side quests, despite the fact that he's supposed to be returning this child.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, and it's cool.
I'm bringing that the Imperial dude at the end of season one. You know, what was his name? I can't remember his name.
But he has the Darksaber.
Gideon, thank you. Yeah, the Darksaber, yeah.
So that was the Darksaber that the... they're looking for, right?
That's what they said, yes.
Yeah, because I thought, you know, when you were saying they had that, and I'm like, okay. And I heard that they were looking for the Darksaber. I'm like,
yeah. Oh. Well, and then you get the – now, I haven't seen the episode yet. I'm two behind. I got two to watch yet. I'm probably going to watch – I may watch one tonight before I go to bed after the show maybe. But
well, there's also some controversy – supposedly controversial yes. stuff that happens in the second one, and I can kind of understand where people are coming from with it.
The armor?
Still, no.
Oh.
No, I know what you're talking. I was like, when I heard about the controversial stuff, I'm like, man, I gotta see this. And I'm like, oh, really? Okay. Well, yeah, I kind of get it, but.
Yes. Well, I mean, the one I saw was Anita Sarkeesian making a comment about the female Mandos, Mandalorians with the armor to accommodate their breasts. And I'm like, yeah, are you kidding me?
That's third episode, not second episode.
Yeah. Yeah. I figure it's one of the two I haven't seen yet, but yeah. it's like, I'm like, just stop. It's just stupid. I mean, it's a fictional show. Watch it and freaking enjoy it. And I mean, I know her concerns, but jeez.
Well, that was people's other side of the issues with the second episode. It's just right. a show, people. Right. It's fictional.
Right.
I hope they go to more planets besides the three that they've been floating around,
like Tatooine.
But that was still fun, man. I really dug. I dug that, it really borrows a lot from Firefly.
Yeah, they're going to a lot of moons right now mm-hmm. that are around that same area for some reason.
But well, the one neat thing though with the most current episode, well, actually the next one comes out tomorrow of Star Trek Discovery, was and I'm not going to tell you why or where, but you get to see some interesting starships. In the third episode, one of them is the Voyager J.
So this is still pre-Kirk, right?
No. They made a jump from the end of season 2 to ahead of all Star Trek lore.
Okay.
So basically way past Picard, Star Trek Picard even. So it's past that. So they're in the very far future. Okay, so you saw the USS Voyager J. I should know the registry number, but
is Pike still around then?
No, he's long gone. But they're supposed to be making a Captain Pike series, I heard. But beyond that though, you also get to see the USS Nog, which I thought classy touch.
Yeah.
Especially since he died.
Yep.
And, but I, like I said, I don't want to say too much because it would completely blow the entire storyline to tell you where it was, where you saw these ships, and why.
Yeah, it'll Nog blow it because I plan on watching it.
Yeah, Nog was a good character from DS9.
One of the better Ferengi characters they had, yes.
Yeah.
Although I liked his dad. His dad was fun, too.
Yeah, he was pretty cool. A Ferengi with, you know, integrity.
Yeah.
And zero business sense.
But the sci-fi stuff is... It's the perfect thing to watch when you're in a stay-at-home advisory again.
Yeah. And WandaVision got moved to January.
I did it.
Yeah, so we'll pick that up then. And did we Cyberpunk should be 2077 ever finally get released?
No, I think it's a December release now. February. I thought it would move to February.
Okay, I thought it was moved to like mid-December.
Well, it's like the Top Gun sequel. We should be watching that on Blu-ray anytime now. But basically, it got canceled.
Yeah, basically give up on any movies coming out this year.
Wonder Woman?
Yeah. Not, yeah. You're right, Joe. It's December 10th, 2020.
Okay.
Actually, it makes me wonder if they're just going to bring out the new Top Gun movie on streaming. That would be their better bet.
Well, it would have been their better bet with a lot of movies, but you know what? They're holding off until theaters open up. But guess what? Theaters aren't going to open up.
Normally,
not like they want to anyway.
At least this is. Even if looked into it.
Even if theaters were to open up in February, okay, and that's earlier than I would expect, because of the rise in numbers right now. But even if they open up in February, you're still going to have enough people saying, no, I'm not going out because of COVID, that a movie isn't going to make as much as they would expect it to through the theaters. Release it on streaming. Charge $30. People will pay it.
Some.
Granted, there will be always somebody that, you know, makes a torrent out of it, but they do that when it's released to movie theaters anyway. How many cams are there of a movie?
Chinese subtitles.
Right?
Gorkon left channel and disconnected.
They got him.
Got rid of his ass. Pat, why up, don't man? You hit us up, man, with that audio stuff you were talking about? Because I'm excited to hear that.
So last week, you know, I tried to get on the show, and like my audio was killed. And the reason why it was killed was I've been trying to get back into like the Linux recording stuff. So, you know, our door jack and whatnot and that stuff. The drum machines like Hydrogen, some of the software synths, you know, like Zinsynth. And there's a new synth that's really good. It's called Odin 2. The sounds are phenomenal. And there's a bunch of really good presets. I've been playing around with that. So the easiest way to get this stuff going is if you got Ubuntu on a machine, is do the Ubuntu Studio package. And that'll pull in like your low latency kernel, all the audio tweaks, track, all the specific builds, you know, our door, which is a multi-tracker. They're on release 6. I used it back in the day when I was doing the MIT-TV cast, and I'm somewhat familiar with it. But what I'm trying to do is get into the recording. I want to get some music going. So what I didn't do back then was MIDI. So in our door, you could pull in, like, if you got a software synth, and it's LST-capable, which is like their architecture, you can fire it up. You can connect a MIDI keyboard and play the sounds on the software synth and record them inside of our door. It's really cool. You can also do that in Q-Tracker, I believe, too, which is another application. But I kind of like our door. It's more of like a real like home recording setup, you know, multi-tracking. They call them doors, digital audio workstations. But it's basically a software audio recording. You know, back in the day when you went to a recording studio, you know, the guy had a mixing board, you would mic up your amps, and then you would go to tape. Now it's all on the computer pretty much. So basically you need to get your sound into the system. So what I picked up, and you know, I picked up a Behringer external audio card, USB card, and mic preamp. So I got the UMC 404 HD. I was going to get the 202 HD, but they discontinued it. So I just got the 404, and it sounds good. I got my Samson mic hooked up, and it's definitely a much improvement, better than the crappy mic I was using. So. You know, so
is that just a RCA interface into the USB?
Yeah, you can do XLRs or also line ins, quarter inch plugs. If you're doing like, you have like a guitar preamp or, you know, a mic that has a direct out or a speaker emulation, you can run that into that. So Right now I'm not running jack. Right now I'm just running regular ALSA because I don't need it just for this, for mumble. But if I'm doing the recording stuff, you gotta start jack and then you fire up your audio applications. Another application I've been playing around with is, Carla, which you can use, some of these, synths and drum machines. You could use them as like a standalone if you don't want to fire up our door just to play around with it. And that works pretty good. And then, what else? Hydrogen drum machine. There's a whole bunch of new drum machines out there. There's this one called Red Zeppelin. It's a plugin. And the sounds on that are pretty good. They're all like sampled of actual drums. And it's really good. Like it seems like, you know, I've been away from it from maybe 3-4 years and it seems to have come along quite a bit. It's actually quite usable now. And I've been watching some videos on YouTube. This guy, Unfa, U-N-F-A, he does like, he records full albums all, you know, using the Linux stuff. And the quality is quite good, you know, and he does a bunch of tutorials. And I recommend watching him on YouTube. There's also the Ardour channel also. They have a bunch of tutorials on how to set up the sessions, how to get it going, how to import the audio. So the main thing is getting, you know, you could do, you know, if you don't want to buy anything, you could do like software synths, drum machines, MIDI, if you have like a little MIDI keyboard with a USB plug. You can do that and fire up a software synthesizer and do that. But I want to get some real instruments too mixed in with the MIDI, so that's why I needed the external USB card. To get, you know, I can either mic my cabinet, my guitar cabinet up with it and with the microphone using this, or I could just run it out direct either with an effects processor direct into the USB box or, you know, something like that. And so I'm getting into it and it looks really exciting and I'm into it. I mean, you can go different routes. There's some like audio specific distros. I forget the name of it, but, no, on this machine, I'm running Ubuntu, so I was like, yeah, fuck it, just pull Ubuntu Studio in, and it does all the heavy-duty lifting.
Remind me if Dynabolic is still around.
I don't know.
I think it is, but I don't think it's being developed anymore.
Yeah, it's just maintained, right? To just keep the current packages.
Let me see.
Yeah, but our door is looking really good.
DYNE.org.
It's our doors. He's on release 6, and I think we had him on. Didn't we have the guy who developed it for Davis on?
I believe we did.
Yeah. So the Linux stuff is coming around. They're doing plugins that are natively compiled for Linux. You got that Core Duo and Duo Dwarf effects, you know, guitar box that's basically a Linux box. I think that thing's really exciting. What they're doing with that. And, I'm really interested in that. You know,
September 2011 was the last release.
Yeah,
Dynabolic 3 beta.
I was looking for it. And yeah, that's their website looks like it might have like, well, oh yeah, it's starting to look kind of dated. Screenshots when they finally load in.
Ubuntu. The only thing I don't like you can download Ubuntu Studio, like it did the distro CD and install that. The only thing, and I think it's still this way. The last time I checked it out, which was quite a few years ago, it doesn't include, it assumes that if you're putting Ubuntu Studio on a PC, that you're putting it on a PC that has Ethernet, and that is, it's not loading Wi-Fi drivers. Okay. So it may be better off doing it like Pat just did, because then your Wi-Fi will already be set up, and you don't have to mess around with trying to get it to work. It's not that you can't get it to work on Ubuntu Studio, but you can. I mean, you can, but it's like, that kind of segs into something I want to talk about, but we'll wait until Pat's done already.
With the jack, you know, you don't need it for just running your day-to-day audio applications, you know, with sound. It's when you get into the recording and you're pulling in MIDI and plugins and all that crap. Then you need to run that, especially if you got an external, you know, input box.
Well, our door is a multi-track recorder, so you can recording everything at once into its own track into our door. So
exactly.
That's why you need jack for.
And you could do MIDI, which is really, really important. You could do synthesizers, and the synthesizers, there's some really good ones out there. That Odin 2 one is excellent.
Right.
There's like bass, there's pads, there's organs. You know, there's some really good sounds in there. You know, definitely.
And then,
I recommend checking that out if you want to check out. That was recently open source, so that's really, really promising.
And the nice thing about Jack, though, is it's essentially like not just a sound driver, but it's sound driver plus
it's routing. It's
mixer.
Routing your sounds into different
and routing,
apps.
Right? So it's like you don't have to, you could do it's basically a virtual mixing board almost, you know, except for
it's like a patch
bay.
It's a
around.
Virtual
yeah.
patch bay. But they're looking to replace it. There's this new protocol, I think it's called Pipe or something like that.
Right.
Supposedly it's much simpler, Like when you're doing jack, you got ALSA and then pulse and all that. Supposedly with this pipe setup they're going to go to, it's just one thing and it's much simpler. We'll see.
And there was something similar on the Mac that did that too back in the day, but it goes to where, depending on what you need to do on the audio side, you know, it's like you do that or you just record separate tracks in Audacity, you know, which, you know, I guess it just depends on what you're trying to do. If you've got like a band you're working on together or something like that,
if you're a keyboard player.
But, you know, so it's like how far do you go?
Yeah, I'll give you a sample of this Odin 2 synth. It's really good. Check it out. Oh, yeah. Hold on a sec. I'll play it for you.
Did you do that?
Do a new theme.
Yeah, that was just, you know, going in through it. That's a recording, you know, just a little clip.
That's pretty cool. I sound like we were back in the 80s.
Yeah, it's really good. There's some really good sounds in that thing. So Odin 2.
Odin 2.
So you could set up a Carla, which is a standalone if you don't want to use our door just to play around with it. Or you can also do it in Q-Tractor too also.
All right. Q-Tracker, I think it was in that portable setup that Door did a while ago. I can't remember.
Yeah, I know Klaatu was involved with Q-Tractor. I don't know if you've talked to him anytime recently, if he's still around or not.
I checked, he was in Australia, I thought.
Is he? Or New Zealand or something, right? But I was talking to Claudio, and we're talking about maybe doing like maybe we could do a segment talking about some of the auto stuff. Because he's a keyboard player, so he's more into the MIDI stuff, and he knows that stuff more than me. So we'll see.
Let's just talk about you bring up MIDI, and I think of the old school video games we used to play, how all the sounds and all the music was all MIDI. You know, like if you played the
MIDI's been around a long time. It's been around since the mid-80s, and the keyboard has had it. And you could do samples and shit and play all sorts of awesome sounds. But the guitar stuff the last like 2-3 years is insane. They have this stuff, they have these things, just a side segue. With the guitar, they have these things called impulse responses, and they're basically speaker and cabin emulations that you can pull into your recordings and like use it as an effect, and you'll basically make your guitar sound like any amplifier out there. It's insane. It's all software-based.
See, I need to look at my wish list. One of the things I had in my wish list on Amazon was a Yamaha Venova casual wind instrument, which I think has MIDI on it.
I got this Akai keyboard. I think I paid $35 for it. It's an LPK 25. It's just a little keyboard, but it's USB. But with this little keyboard, you know, it's MIDI capable. And you can play with the software since drum machines off of it.
Okay, so this isn't electro. I thought this Yamaha thing was electronic, but it's actually an actual wind instrument. It definitely is because it's only $70. But
you have other instruments that are MIDI capable now, like with guitars, they have a MIDI pickup, which is basically converts the sound into, you know, MIDI.
Right.
Basically, all it is, you know, on, off, how hard you're hitting it, you know, sustain, that kind of thing.
Yep.
But you can do that and hook that up. You could hook up a guitar to a synthesizer module, and you can get guitar sounds and synthesizer sounds at the same time. It's crazy what you could do now.
Yeah, I'd have to get something like a MIDI wind controller or something like there might be one that I can use, but like there's Roland makes one, Akai also makes one too.
Yeah, supposedly the best MIDI guitar pickup is this Fishman, which they used to do like transducers and that kind of stuff. But they have one that's like, I think it's like $250-ish.
Right.
And it has a software suite that you can put on either an iPad or Kindle, any Android. Mm-hmm. And it's insane. Mm-hmm. It's all different synthesizer sounds, and you can you can do that on there and play around with that.
See, in a lot of ways nowadays, MIDI has kind of gone back to roots in that it was used for music creation, not as much with game. Because, I mean, I don't remember the last time I played a video game that actually had MIDI music in. It's all pre-recorded Redbook audio that runs off the CD track for the most part, or an MP3 track built into the game. Right. You know? So the about the only people that even care about MIDI anymore are musicians, and that's it. You know, the gamers, typical gamers are like, just like, I don't care. You know, back in the, you know, prime time, you know, when all this stuff was like in the '90s when we were in college and right after we graduated from high school, people would buy Roland MT32s to plug into their PCs so they can play, Space Quest.
What, 3 sounds from it?
Yeah, so they can get better sounds and cause that, you know, the old Roland MT32s, MIDI boxes that you attach to your PC, those things were very commonly used for games because at that time, that's the only kind of music you had was MIDI music. You know, and the more realistic it sounded like, the more it sounded like a modern game, you know, which actually uses real instruments that were recorded, you know, but, well, sometimes it's probably synthesized, but very, very rarely is music in video games today actual MIDI tracks for multiple reasons.
If there's synthesizers, that they're using MIDI to generate right. The sounds and control the synthesizers.
Well, they may be using it on one side, but they're not putting the MIDI instructions into the game.
No, they're not putting
the
MIDI files, no. The MIDI right. files aren't in there anymore. It's actual recorded audio, wave.
Yep, a wave or compressed audio of some sort, yeah. But it's crazy, but...
No, it's exciting stuff. It seems to be very usable now. So I'm going to be getting into it, and I'll have updates as we go along.
Yep. It kind of goes towards, you know, you talked about some of, like, the Ardour, you know, whether you do Ardour or whether you do this or not. You know, I guess it all depends on what your end goal is, and that kind of goes back towards some of the posts I've been seeing lately on the Raspberry Pi Facebook group. Where, like, some guy will post, like, he posted, like, he had a spare keyboard, like, it was a laptop keyboard, so it was apart from a laptop, you know? And he's like, how do I repurpose this? And I'm like, you're gonna spend more time trying to figure out how to make that laptop keyboard work with a Raspberry Pi than it costs to go buy a $15 keyboard at Walmart. And I'm like, I get why you want to learn it, but why? And that's always my question. In that one and other ones, like I see the same kind of thing with like in the Creality group, you know, where they'll order a 3D printer from China, direct from Creality, and then when they get it, there's something wrong with it, you know, and it's usually something stupid and minimal, like maybe there was a missing screw or a missing bolt or something, and they're like, return the whole thing back to China. I'm like, just go buy the freaking screw or the bolt and fix it and be done with it. You have to learn how to do that anyway to use a 3D printer. 3D printers are not appliances. But but it goes towards,
not yet.
What is your end goal? You know, and for me, the older I get, I don't know about you or any of you guys, but the older I get, the less I want to dick with learning how to do something it's not to say I'm not going to learn or teach myself something new on the technical side of things. I do all the time. But I have to gain some value to it. You know, am I going to sit there and fix headphones? Not something I enjoy. Joe enjoys that. So he does that. And I get that 100%. Would I bother with that? No. All right. Would I bother with trying to make my own arcade cabinet for the new house? I don't know. Jury's still out. I'm still thinking about that. But would I buy a lot of stuff that's pre-made, so I basically just have to throw the Pi in it, you know, or a kit? You know, I probably would do a kit or something just because my time is worth money. You know, be it whether I'm doing work stuff or just other things that are more important to me. Time is more important to me to do things I enjoy versus to do things that I enjoy and want to learn sometimes. It just depends on what it is, I guess. You know, I mean, what's your feelings on that? I mean, would you want to try and figure out how to make that keyboard work on your Raspberry Pi? Is it worth it to you?
It might be worth it to do a read on it, but I don't know if it'd be worth it to actually put in the labor for it, because you're also going to have to buy some type of adapter or some type of parts. Yep. And at that point, then you might as well just
buy
build your own keyboard.
Or if get that's this what one we just talked about, right?
Yeah. Well, no, because if you have a 3D printer, it is possible to print out the frame and the case in pieces for your own keyboard. And then you get a Teensy 2.0 Plus. And there are, you can make it whatever format keyboard you want to. And you can wire it all up yourself and do all the soldering yourself and set it to that Teensy. And then have your own from scratch mechanical keyboard for what? Less than $60.
Right.
But still, yeah, that's a lot of work, and it's a lot of frustrating work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say the same thing for, like, if you wanted to build, like, your own drone or something, you know. Especially if it wasn't already a kit or something, because you would have to sit there and do all the math, figure out, center of gravity calculations, how much power you need, you know. All the right things, right? Maybe write some code to actually have it do everything, well, or you can go buy a DJI.
Right. I know a couple of podcasts back when, like video podcasts, that did the full run through on how to build your own small size drone when the FAA FCC. When they started making the rules saying your drone has to be below such and such a size for you to be able to fly it without a license. But, and that was Hack5 did a whole tutorial on it and KnowHow did a whole tutorial on it. And that was just like weeks and weeks worth of episodes on how to do it. And they did go through the whole process, but obviously it is a crap ton of work. And a crap ton of math, even if you're following somebody else's guide and buying their parts. And it still has to be, like, really easy to make a balance mistake on that type of thing.
Mm-hmm. Incredibly easy. And then nowadays, it's like, you don't even do.
Yeah.
You know, that's the thing. You know, it's like, you know, where do you draw the line? You know, like, I know Dan used to run his own email server, and think Dan still runs his own email server, right?
Yes, Dan still does.
Does Dan get any email at his own email server?
Right?
Dan gets a lot of spam.
Yeah.
That's what I was gonna say, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, well, my wife just sent me an article. We were talking about Wonder Woman 1984 earlier, and it's coming to HBO Max and theaters December 25th. So they're trying to get the best of both worlds right now, which is cool. I like it that I dislike it that it's coming to a service that I don't have and would prefer it as a rental on like Prime or something. But it's cool that they're doing a digital and theaters.
Well, that's like in actually just story we talked about last month where the Apple Plus had the monopoly on the Peanuts specials. Well, now it came out that they are going to show both the Thanksgiving and the Christmas specials on PBS.
Did they show the Halloween special?
No. That was only on Apple Plus. So maybe they'll change that next year, but we'll see what happens.
But, yeah.
But there must have been enough. And that's been a real staple of the holiday season from October through Christmas. You know, I don't know about you, but my mom and dad, especially, you know, maybe not Joe's mom and dad, but my mom and dad, and I'm sure that Pat and Dan had similar experiences where, you know, when those specials were on, that was a big family night, man. And we all would gather around the TV, pop popcorn, have some hot chocolate maybe, you know, and we'd watch that show because back in the day, that was the only way you could watch it. Was when it was on TV.
Yeah, it only came around once a year.
Exactly. Right. So, I mean.
Well, when I was young, they had those 24 and 48 hour marathons of specific popular classic
A Christmas Story
movies, A Christmas Story, some of the Peanuts stuff, things like that.
I do. Yep, they still do that. But
well,
it's
see, Joe, when we were young,
yeah,
we may not have had a VCR where you could have bought the special to watch. We had to watch it on a TV where you turned a dial to change
the channel. You guys were, you know, dodging the dinosaurs. And
depending on what age we were, it could have been black and white, too.
we did have a VCR. And for a while, my mom worked at a video store, so I was able to get that stuff then. But there were a lot of times where all I had was my little black and white TV.
Yup, black and white. Actually,
I had a black and white TV in my room.
In college, I had a black and white TV. Yeah, in college, I was in college in the early 90s, and I had a black and white TV. Now, granted, I bought it, you know, back when I was young and dumb and had my first credit card, I bought one because I wanted a TV that I could watch what I wanted to watch. I didn't want to have to watch what the roommates were watching, you know. But that's what I can afford. I bought a Sony Watchman TV.
Now, my parents got me like a little like 12 or 16 inch black and white TV, and it was mostly just to keep me in my bedroom and out of their hair.
Right.
But
now it's like, yeah, these streaming services, and I still think, you know, event TV works good, for live action. I don't know what they're, nowadays, whether it's even worth to do, like, am I gonna turn on PBS and watch it? Probably not, because I just bought the Blu-rays. So,
yeah,
you know, but I'm glad it's there. I think it's something that needs to happen because not everyone has all that we have. We are, you know, if you know, we have high speed in it. We have multiple computers. Every one of us has at least one computer, probably more, surrounding us. And there's still people in this world that don't have basic internet or a laptop, you know, or Netflix or any of that.
Right, right.
Even in our own country. So, I mean, you know, to me, those are important things, and they're family events that's around there.
Yeah. You know,
kind of go further to that, where one thing that's been kind of grinding my gears is when I get brethren of mine, very few at my church do this, but I've seen a lot of people, mostly online, they'll complain about happy holidays. And I'm like, one of the reasons I kind of don't anymore is because of my relationships I have, both at work, and to a limited extent with my neighbors here, that a lot of my neighbors are Indian. And if you don't know, Diwali was celebrated last weekend by the Indians and Hindus. All right. And, in fact, we had to cover, every hour over the weekend. Our team did. So we had multiple American folks. On call in the middle of the night. So
I had coworkers that celebrated Diwali, but they still worked.
Well, that's interesting. Sometimes now we'll have some people work, some people don't. Our company usually gives them the time off. So, just like we get, next week off Thursday and Friday, and then I get, Christmas Eve and Christmas Day off. But in any event though, one of my neighbors, she did a peacock rangoli. And one of the things, you know, when I walked out, I thought, well, first the thing I thought was how beautiful it was, because it was very beautiful. And the second thing I thought, why in the world am I getting mad? Would I ever get mad if somebody has told me happy holidays when we're not the only ones that have a holiday at this time of the year?
Why would I expect somebody that doesn't celebrate Christmas to say Merry Christmas to me?
Exactly.
But I mean, I wouldn't expect them to get mad for me saying Merry Christmas to them.
Because that too.
Right. I'm celebrating this holiday, so I hope you have a nice holiday at the same time.
Right. But, you know, and so I mean, actually got a really good Facebook post and page, Dan's daughter commented on it, which I think is actually good praise from someone that young commenting on my own Facebook post, but, that isn't a relative, but it's like, if I actually saw my neighbor, which I didn't, it's not like I go out and seek them. I don't have a close relationship with anybody here, right? And I don't really want one either. But if I saw them, I would have told them happy Diwali. And that's kind of what I told my teammates on our Slack channel. But it's like, it irritates me. And I don't even know why I brought that up. It just irritated me. You know, when I see people that I know who are Christians that they'd say, oh, it's Merry Christmas. I'm like, screw you. I know that's not nice language to use, but I'm like, come on.
What daughter commented?
Paige.
Speaking of that, you want to hear something pretty interesting?
Mm-hmm.
Paige entered and won Alice Cooper's pants.
Really?
In the Alice Cooper pants. She submitted a video. And she got a message yesterday that she was a winner of a pair of Alice Cooper's pants that he wore on stage. Her video was really good.
I bet you they might fit her, but I doubt they'll fit you.
No, I don't think they're going to fit me. But I will post the video in the chat.
Paige is very creative.
It was a fantastic video. And it fit his, like, style really well, I think. There we go.
I like Alice Cooper.
I'll post it for you too, Joe. Where's the mumbled?
He can't find his windows.
He can't find his pants?
He can't find Alice Cooper's pants. He can't find his good sweatpants either.
Why can't I add something to the mumble chat?
Miss you, Peggy.
I'm wearing good windbreaker pants, but not sweatpants.
I'm wearing sweatpants and a white t-shirt.
Oh, there we go. Mm-hmm. Do it that way. There we go.
I'm getting more medication from my puppy in the mail in a day or two. Sassy's got arthritis in her hips, so we have to give her Galliprant every day.
Does it help?
Seems to. She seems to get around a little bit better. You know, but it's, you know, I was starting to really worry about her because she would really complain about it, her hips and stuff, especially, now granted, gotta remember where we used to live, we had stairs and we don't have that anymore, so now it's just like she stumbles out the door and goes, you know. There's no stairs around here at all. But
are you on the first floor?
Yep.
Oh, that's, there you go.
Which is I'm thankful for too, because we're, you know, when we go to move now, we do have a I won't say hard close date.
So in 2032, when your house is done,
no,
is it going to be a two story?
Well, it is two stories. It's got my office is on the second story.
Okay, and, so you're back to having stairs.
Yeah, just for me.
In 2045, when the house is finished.
Nope, February 19, 2021 is our close date. That's the tentative one. So I'm guessing we are probably either we've just had our building contracts or not contracts, permits.
Have they poured the foundation yet?
No, not yet. I'm hoping they do soon because that's worrying me a little bit because it was below freezing here. But it's flirting with freezing.
So they'll pour the foundation in probably like April or May.
Nah, they'll pour it. It'll be fine. It's going to be warm enough to do that. Of course, now granted, I will say this. They don't have to dig much because we don't have a basement. So, I mean, they'll have to dig, of course, but, you know, because they have to make sure all the plumbing and all that jazz is in. But there's no cinder block wall they have to do. There's none of that because, you know, basically it's on a slab. So once they get the slab done, and if they get that done before we get a nice hard freeze, I have no doubt they'll be able to make that date. They'll do framing in a week. I guarantee you that. I mean, it won't take you long to do framing because a lot of things will be pre-done. Like they'll have the roof, joists will all be pre-assembled stuff, you know. Not gonna be like my brother's house. My brother's was literally prefab. It's like my brother's house where he lives now. It was practically brought in on a trailer, sat down on the foundation, tied up together, maybe a few things done inside, and that was about it. I mean, his house was done really quick. Mine's stick built, but it's gonna have like the joists and the stuff. You know, a lot of those things are gonna be pre-done. You know. Mm-hmm. Pre-built stairs, stuff like that, you know.
Too bad 3D printed houses aren't, you know, more of a thing than they are right now.
Not yet. Not the size that I'm building anyway. You know.
Another probably 50 years and...
Yep.
You can customize your own 3D printed house.
But then it's like me and Luke were talking about on the way home. And I said, well, he's like... He was wondering if we're going to have a garage door opener when we move in. And I said, I don't know. And we could all the model homes we've been to had garage door openers. In fact, 9 times out of 10, that's how we went to the end of the house. But he's like, I said, if we don't, Dad ain't doing that shit. We did that when we first moved in. It was me and my brother,
oh, you're not going to make a pie based one so that you can control it from your phone?
Hell no. I can probably do that. Actually, you can probably buy one that you can do that with anyway.
Alexa enabled garage door.
It's like, you know, you get the Google rewards, right? All right. So, I got one this week. It says, would you want to unlock your door with the Google Assistant? I'm like, nope.
Yeah, because that's, you know, super secure.
Oh, yeah. I mean, granted, I probably can do that in a new house, but then one of the things I might do is I might look at how secure I can make it. You know, can I make it so you have to do a verbal passcode or, you know?
Thumbprint.
Or two-factor or anything like that, you know?
Eye scan, something.
Yeah. But, I mean, I know certain things. Like I am going to have, like, by the front door, the front door will have its own ring-like system. It's not ring, but it's something else. And it'll connect into the screen that's right by the front door, which also has the thermostat and some of the, there's at least one switch in the house that'll be controllable from that panel. And the thermostat will be that from that, and you can also control it from smartphones. That's all.
Beat
all
left home channel and disconnected.
Ooh.
Who left?
Did that say Dan?
No. No, I didn't.
I don't know.
J left.
Pete J.
Pete J.
You know, here's a good question, man. I'll tell you what. I need to get a new phone soon, but I'm kind of dreading getting a new phone.
Because I don't want to have to deal with resetting up and transferring all that MFA stuff.
Right?
Yeah, a lot of your two-factor authentication applications make it somewhat easy to move to a new device.
Yeah.
Like
Authy makes it simple. You just you have to turn on your ability to log into two devices and then log into the second device and then have everything transferred over and then log out from the first device and set your account back to only do one.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? I never even looked into that. I figured that what I would have to do, like it did in the past, because I use Google, I use Google Authenticator, is that I would have to unenroll the service from MFA and then re-enroll on the new device. And that was always a pain in the ass because it's like a requirement at work and I can't easily unenroll from it because they require you to have it.
Yeah, well, so, with my work,
IT
I just...
That's what your IT support's for at work, dude.
Yeah.
I hate having, like, it's always such a pain in the ass, but.
Now, I will say this. The one thing, and I'll go through this once my new iPad arrives, but this actually, I think this is how Apple does it with pretty much, I think even the iPhone is like this. If you get a new iPhone, that you can basically set it up based on like any iOS device that you have. Like I could have my phone be the basis for my new iPad. Not that I would, but I could because my iPhone is my work phone. And I don't want to. It's like one of the annoying things with iDevices is that iMessage, the default text app. If you have it, you can basically set it up so that it syncs. Like, for example, when you get a text message on your iPhone, then it comes over on your iPad, too. I don't want that because my iPad's not a work device. I don't want text coming from work to my iPad, so I don't turn that part of it on.
Yeah, so, well, I know with my work, I did have to reset up my two-factor authentication, but that's because
I did too.
They make their own app, and so I have to get the specific
we use
authorization and key. To be able to set it up on the new device.
Right. We used to use RSA, but now we use Okta for our second factor, which is actually really much easier because basically what happens is when I log into the VPN, I'll get a notification on my phone, my work phone, and says, "Hey, did you log in from Dublin, Ohio?" And I'll tap yes. And then I'm logged in and I'll have to type the number in. Now I still can do that. That's still an option. But I don't have to type the number in. Basically, something you have, something you know. So, the nice thing is my corporate laptop password and getting into the VPN never has to change now. Granted, I also have two other domains that I use commonly. Not counting my some of our customers have us log into their own domain for certain things. They just sent us ones for, now I had a Canadian one because we had one of our, in fact, I just upgraded them like last week, to a new version of, via messaging, Elution messaging application. I can't remember. EMA. Is what we call it. It's a custom application running on top of Tomcat. So I deployed that there and I had to, cause they were a Canadian client, I had to log into our ca.admin, domain. But just got more emails. Now I don't know what it means for us because I don't really have a use for them because all of our clients are North America. But they added Singapore and a few others that logins for those. So, but we have the nice thing with us, though, at least for those things, is we have a reset website that you can go to, as long as you can log into one of them or the main login domain you log in day to day. it works. So as far as the second factor goes, it's something similar to that where either I can have it text me a one-time thing to get things set up initially or something. I forget. It's been a while. I just got a new phone. I'm trying to remember last year, I think it was. So I probably won't. I don't know if it'll be this year or next year that I can get a new work phone or not. So, and do I even want to bother? You know, my iPhone's stable and it works well and for what I need it for. But I will say this, one thing, kind of annoying thing is that, when I do get pages, I'll get, the first thing I hear is the default text, sound that comes in off the iPhone, because I don't change my alerts at all. At least for most things. So I'll hear that. But my wife has an iPhone 2, that's her personal phone. And usually when I hear that doo-doo noise, which is the default text message noise, before the next ones come in, which is usually the phone call, because it'll text me and phone call, and then I get an alert in the application itself that's on the phone, right? But when it comes in from the phone call, I got a really, like a real loud ringtone. So I'll hear the quiet one first, and I go, oh, shit. And then the other one comes in. So one day I'm standing there in the kitchen, I hear my wife's phone, and I immediately say that, and she's like, what? And I'm like, wait, oh, wait a minute. Oh, that's you. Oh, thank God. I hate getting pages. But it's my life. It's all of our lives.
You say pages, and I expect you to actually pull out a pager.
Well, that's because that's the name of our app, PagerDuty. But, yeah. Ringtones. I don't change mine that much. Although I did change one of them. Like, the email alert I must have changed because whenever I get an email, I'll get a minion laugh because I did that because I was sitting in the airport one time when I was still traveling for work, and I kept hearing the default email from iPhones, and everyone has a freaking iPhone in the airport, so I was constantly be checking the phone and like no oh. So I changed mine to something only I would recognize. I changed it to something that was also fun, and I used the minion laugh. But
yep. Well, I picked up a TV the other day.
Uh oh.
I don't think I talked about this.
Hopefully, it was a light TV. Show.
Huh?
Hopefully it was a light TV.
Yeah, it's super light. It's a 48-inch TV. My wife found it. And, well, you'll never believe how much we paid for it.
How big was the TV?
48-inch? 48-inch.
$48.
$200. Nope.
$135.
Mm-mm.
$156.
Nope.
$176.99.
Nothing.
$0.
$0?
Yep.
You steal it?
No. Somebody was giving it away because it had a line down in the bottom.
A line of what?
Like a miscolored line.
Okay.
Just across the bottom. And, it's with a free TV, and especially since that's one of two things when the line is, across the bottom like that instead of up and down. It's either a bad panel or a bad ribbon cable. One of them's a really easy fix. One of them's you might as well just get a different TV. And, you know, sometimes just jarring the television, gets that ribbon cable back in. And yeah, by the time I got it to the house, it was working perfect. So I got
jostling it around, fixed it.
Yeah, I got a perfectly
loose ribbon cable.
Yep, loose ribbon cable. 48-inch TV, $0.
Nice.
And wow. The plasma, the 60-inch TV that I had in my garage, we also got for free. But I didn't like that one because the proximity using it with my garage computer, the power supply on it, on a plasma, just a horrible whine from it. So I put that in the kids' area. They'll appreciate the larger TV. They're also further away from it, so the sound will impact them less.
How big do I go for my home office / man cave?
75, 80 inches.
Sounds good to me. They're actually reasonably priced. Well, plus it's also a 19 by 11 room, so.
Price per inch, your best is usually around 60 to 65 inches. Once you start getting into the 70 plus range, you're not going to find anything less than a couple of $1,000, really. At least not that I've seen.
Now, I went into, the Best Buy near me has one of those Magnolia rooms. And I went in there and they had 8K TVs, man. And it's like, why bother? There's no 8K content.
Well, for the same reason that people were buying 4K TVs before there was 4K content. Because eventually there was going to be 4K content. Now, granted, we haven't seen a saturation point with the 4K content, but people are already expecting 8K content. But there is a lot of conversion and step-up that happens.
Oh, there is. So, there is.
My wife just pointed out a $700 100-inch TV to me. I think she wants me to go Christmas shopping or something.
Sounds good to me.
Oh, it's a projector screen. It's not an actual TV.
Still sounds good to me.
Well, I have a projector.
While you're out there Christmas shopping, can you pick me up a PlayStation 5, Joe?
How about no?
Are they out of stock yet?
Okay. Yes, they are. $3,600. For a 100-inch TV, 4K UHD. And that's a big nope on my part.
Now, when I buy that, now, see, I have my TV in the living room. It is 4K, but I am definitely buying 4K for the office when I buy an office TV. But I'm thinking about also buying a 4K Blu-ray. So I do have some 4K Blu-rays, like my Peanuts movies, which is kind of dumb. They're 4K. Well, actually, they're both. I have both the HD and the 4K version.
How are they 4K? They were.
I know, right?
They were made like back in 70 or 60?
1965.
If they've got the original prints, then it's not actually 4K. It's a 4K print.
Well, I was gonna say, since those were all cell art created, you know, with the plastic overlays and all that, they could remaster it into 4K, but I have no way of watching it right now. Cause I have a Blu-ray disc, for like my laptops that plugs in via USB. I haven't actually tried putting a 4K in it lately. But it's probably not going to work. But yeah, I do intend on in the 4K Blu-ray players. They're not awfully expensive and they'll still play the standard HD ones too. They'll upscale them. I think they'll upscale them to 4K, depending on which one you get. But I think I probably also would have one with Roku built into it as well. But which I forgot to mention, I actually got to play around a little bit more with the Google Stadia since I got it now. I got it for free, and I got a free month of it.
What'd you play?
Destiny 2.
Destiny 2?
Right.
How did it play?
To the point where I'm probably not going to pay for the Stadia Pro once I go. Because Stadia Pro is like $10 a month and you get some free games. I'm probably not going to pay for that on a monthly basis just because I wasn't that satisfied with it. And I think some of it comes from the shitty internet connection I have.
So it was kind of laggy?
A little bit. A little bit. Yeah, I mean, I can see that. No, and the problem is there's probably not a single time of the day where somebody's not streaming video. You know, either
at
my wife is on
it. Yeah,
my house,
complex.
In my apartment, yeah. You know, in my apartment complex. Well, I'll say this too. On the same DSL link, there's probably not, you know, a single time where anybody is not streaming on our segment of the AT&T's network here. But definitely though in my house though, because like my wife will be working away and she has her iPad set up watching Fubo or Hallmark or something on her iPad. Yeah, at one point I said, you know, you can download that stuff to your iPad. She's like, why do I need to? I'm on the internet the whole time. I'm like, so that you don't take all my bandwidth when I'm trying to work too? Be honest though, I really haven't noticed too much of a problem during the day, and she really hasn't changed her habits. But back to the game. Like, I think my biggest thing with Stadia isn't so much that, you know, the occasional lag I can accept. I'll probably have less of that when I move, because when we move, we'll go back to Spectrum and we'll get a gig connection for that. So that should cure some of the bandwidth woes, which is probably why I wouldn't pay for it until when we move into the new home, if I pay for the Stadia Pro at all. But the nice thing with Stadia Pro is you don't really – Stadia Pro is basically just an add-on. You can just buy games outright on Stadia and then just be able to play the game. All right. So like there's a new Pac-Man game coming out, Pac-Man Tubes or something. I forget what it is. I forget the name of it, but that game, is like $20. So you just pay that and you can play it. You don't have to have Stadia Pro to do it. So the main Stadia service is free. You just have to pay for the games. So, but I don't know how many, so I'll probably go into where I just pay for the games because there's just not that many games I want to play on it. You know, something like this, retro games would be hugely popular, I think, because they would never have a performance issue. Because they're so small in the first place. So streaming that would never be a problem. Unlike streaming a nice 3D shooter like Destiny 2. You know. There's a couple other games I need to try and play on there. Like Crayta is another one that I want to play on there.
Cyberpunk 2077 when it comes out in December.
I don't even know if that's coming to Stadia. I'd have to look.
Pretty sure it is.
But, I mean, is it going to be a success eventually? I think so.
Stadia?
Yeah.
Stadia or something like it. And
right.
You know, if it's it's not a huge, massive success within the next 6 months, then in 8 months it's not going to exist anymore.
Right, Google will kill it. I mean, that's the one nice thing is that Destiny 2, it's the whole thing, and it comes with Stadia Pro. So other games I did claim as part of my subscription are Orcs Must Die 3, Crayta is the other one, and Panzer Dragoon, which is a remake. So, and there's others too. The Pac-Man game is Pac-Man Mega Tunnel Battle. It's not on Stadia Pro, so I'd have to pay $20 anyway, so. And create a deluxe edition. Actually, wait, didn't I not have the deluxe edition? Let me see if I can claim that. No, deluxe edition is a zero buy, so I'll buy it. So, and the nice thing with the ones like this, the Creta Deluxe Edition I just purchased, which was nothing. Nothing with Pro, I should say, I think. I should be able to play that after I don't subscribe to Poe. I don't know. Actually, there's a bunch of new games on here that weren't there last week, so. Assassin's Creed Valhalla Ultimate Edition is $119 on Stadia. Baldur's Gate 3 Early Access is on there. Cyberpunk 2077 is on there. $59.99 pre-order.
Yeah, I'll wait and see how well it does.
But, I mean, there's the one thing that surprises me is that there's absolutely no retro games. There should be. I mean, they should work on getting the licenses for retro arcade games. That would be a hit, I think.
There will be one day.
The controller itself, though, the controller is nice. It feels like a lot like an Xbox 360 controller to me.
Are they still requiring you to buy the controller?
No,
with the service?
You don't.
Okay.
No, because you can run Stadia on your laptop if you want to.
Right.
Right in Chrome. So.
But when it was first coming out in, I think it was late beta.
Right.
They were requiring you to buy their hardware along with the service.
Yep, no longer a requirement. The only thing you have to have, if you want to play it on TV, you have to have a Chromecast Ultra. You can't play it on any Chromecast but that one.
So, which doesn't make a whole lot of sense considering that they were originally touting its ability to play on even, you know, really low-end devices.
But considering that almost, like, every game, like Destiny 2, I can run 4K with Stadia, but I don't because bandwidth.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have it set to 1080, and that's just fine. Yeah. I still get lags a little bit every once in a while.
Yeah, well, you're going to get that at basically any resolution.
Right. It's just it's the latency on the network is what it is mostly. So,
yeah.
So, I mean, once I have a lower latency connection, like once I go to the to Spectrum, I don't expect to have as many problems with it. And
Unless 7 in the afternoon on a Friday.
Possibly. So, I mean, you know, well, we'll see. We'll try it. But I'm like I said, I'm disappointed with, streaming services should be really kowtowing to get back catalog on them because that's going to be popular and cheap for them to get. You know, in a lot of cases, you know, I'm sure that in some cases, depending on the game, there may not be anybody left to respond back when they say, hey, can we do this? So they can just do it in some cases, depending on the game, on the game, the company that wrote the game. But, that's not the case with Atari or Nintendo. Nintendo, I wouldn't expect to see on there. But like, they could easily grab a lot of the arcade games, wouldn't have to do hardly any work to make them work on the streaming service. It would work just fine. It would look good too.
So, yep, do all the old names. Maybe get some Sega on there.
Yep. Or they could even run I think even running something like an old PC game on it would be wonderful too, because you can run it on the laptop and it would work just fine. So like maybe like MechWarrior 2 or even MechWarrior 3 or 4 would run just great on those, I think.
Maybe the entire PS1 collection.
Yep.
Armored Core Masters of Arena.
They could even do desktop games on it without a problem. I think like the old school Sierra games would work great on it, I think.
Double Knight.
Yep. Or Diablo.
Double Knight might run on it already.
Yep. Fortnite's already there. I think. I have to look. I will say I don't like their interface on the app. either on the TV or on the phone. I don't like it. You can play those games on the phone too, by the way, with touchscreen controls if you wanted to.
Right.
I haven't tried it. but but it's supposed to work. So, which makes me wonder, because I could fire it over to the Ryzen 4G, because that's going to be faster than home internet is right now, which is pretty sad. But anyway, but Stadia, yeah, it's worth it if you still have the deal and you have YouTube Premium. I know Alan said he got it. But if you still have the deal on your thing, go for it. I did get another thing in the email. Google's trying to push hard to get extra storage ahead of the changes in Google Photos. So if you pay the, what, it's $99 for 2 terabytes, I think it is, of Google One storage, they'll send you a Google Home Mini for free. Actually, not Google Home Mini. I'm sorry. Google, the Nest Mini, which is the Google Home Mini, the newest version of it, which I have one of those already. So I actually have one, two, counting the Home Hub, I've got 3 of the Google Home stuff. Wait a minute. 4. So I got one in my office, one in our bedroom, one in the living room, and the Home Hub is in the kitchen. And I love the Home Hub because, and they just made some recent updates to it. So it's not just, usually it just, the way it used to be was it would just show, the photos all the time. It's not that you couldn't look up other things on it, but it would only show like in its idle mode, it would just show your slideshow. Okay. It kind of still does that, but it also throws in like occasional, like it'll throw in like a tile on top of the picture with your calendar events on it, stuff like that. And so they're kind of expanding it a little bit. So I think one of the things I'd like to have once we complete the move would be one of the bigger screened Google Home Hubs that I can put in like the kitchen or something like that. And then I can put the smaller one somewhere else. But of the smart home products that listen to you all the time, which I freely acknowledge that I know that happens, but of the two main leaders, I like the Google stuff better than, Amazon stuff. So. And I've never tried the Apple Home Hub, but I don't see a point.
Pretty much.
So the thing is if Siri was actually any good, it might be worth it, but Siri is freaking awful. I mean, it is the worst. And, but the thing I like about the Google stuff is
Apple's the worst? Like,
yeah.
Yes.
For once. But
always.
But yeah, but the thing I like about the Google stuff is like as I'm giving a command, if I start to like fumble with my words or something as I'm giving it a command, it still can understand me sometimes, which is amazing. So, but those are the ones I like the best if you want to get into that. I don't know where building your own comes on. I try to remember what's the open source speaker thing. I don't remember.
Neither do I.
But then the fun part though comes from when I move. How much?
2042.
No, 2021. How much of that will actually work with the Google stuff? Is the Qlosys system is on alarm.com. That's the alarm system / smart home system. The thermostat's a Honeywell T6 Pro Z-Wave thermostat. At least that's what it is currently. Unless they make the update. An Amazon Echo Dot will come with the house. and I get a quick lock, not a quick lock, hold on, quick set. Quick set smart coat 888 deadbolt. An Eaton Z-Wave switch, so everything will use a Z-Wave. And some the doorbell slash camera thing is a Skybell system of some sort. Which is another, I think it's another Z-Wave based thing. But like for some things, like what I want to know
is, left channel, I'm disconnected.
Is
that's good to be that time.
On the smart lock, do I have to put that on my front door? That's my question. I'd rather put it on the garage door, but if I had to put it on the front door, okay, that's fine. I'll just turn off the
remote stuff. It's your house, right?
But you gotta remember that it's made to fit, like, garage doors usually don't have deadbolts. So.
Hold on. It's your house, right?
Truth, but. Like I said, there's always the option to turn off the smart stuff. So, you know, depending on how it works and how secure it looks from my initial inspection after we move in, then I'll decide whether I keep it on or not.
I think the thermostat stuff, excuse me,
thermostat stuff will be pretty cool because I can probably set that from my phone and stuff. So, and voice. So there is that. All right, Jimin, let's have a good. Let's go ahead and play this out, man.
Hey, folks, it's that time of year again. Time for the hack.
What the hell?
New promo. From Honky.
But Dan must not have.
Here I am talking. I'm still muted. I'm sorry. I was just gonna say. I didn't mean to play that right away. This is I'm gonna be playing. It's the HPR promo for the 2020 New Year's Eve episode. Mm. All day 27. So. That's going on again this year?
I should have checked with you, but I figured you wouldn't mind me giving your address to Honky.
Oh, no, not at all. That's perfectly fine.
Honky Magoo.
Oh, wait. Can I move that? Make sure I don't play the one from 2015.
Or the one that had our poorly departed friend, Fitty.
Yeah, and I don't know how to play that one anymore. I should remove that out of this directory.
Delete it entirely.
We'll get Honky to make a new one.
Alright. Are you guys going to be around next week on Wednesday, or should we cancel the show?
Wait, I'm going to be around.
Alright, well, we'll leave it on then.
I'm on vacation.
Yeah, it's Wednesday, on vacation too. And I'm not traveling anywhere, so.
Alright, so we'll all be around next week then.
In fact, we can go late. No, we can't, cause I gotta cook a turkey.
We can't, cause I'm old.
Yeah, Joel,
I'm old! I'm tired! Get off my lawn!
That's right.
Alright. Alright then, here we go. Here's that promo. We'll see you in a week. Thanks for everything. Have a safe and happy week and stay out of trouble. Here it is.
Never.
Hey folks, it's that time of year again. Time for the Hacker Public Radio 24 Hours New Year's Eve show. We encourage everyone to join us for stimulating conversation and maybe send a Happy New Year's greeting to the HBR community. We plan on starting at 10 a.m. UTC December 31st, also known as 5 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, and we will keep the recording going until 12 a.m. UTC January 1st, also known as 7 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, unless people are still on and talking. To join us, all you have to do is install Mumble. It is available on all platforms, including iOS and Android. Then, just create a nick and go to hackerpublicradio.org for the server details. Connect, join the Hacker Public Radio room, and you're there. If you can't join us in Mumble, but would like to hear the show live, we will have a stream up so you can listen. You can go to hackerpublicradio.org for the server details of the stream. So come on and join us. It's always a good time.
Oh my God, it's Hacker
Public Radio. Hacker Public Radio is a daily podcast by the hacker community for the hacker community. If you're interested in technology, creative thinking, hacking, Linux, or any kind of computer, that kind of stuff, you should listen to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.com.
My name is Matt, and I've started a new podcast called LibreQuest. I talk about Linux and general technical topics. To get the show, visit LibreQuest.org.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Yeah, with my tongue brush. Shut up. Just shut up.
Daddy has a gun!
It's over.
While you were making egg poo young in the kitchen, I was in the dining room having sushi.
Mm. Yummy, yummy.
Darkie time.
Yeah, it's almost that time of the year where I spend 3 weeks eating turkey.
Mmm.
I love turkey.
I do too.
It's quite delicious.
Stuffing in the bird or out of the bird? The I say stuffing, in the bird.
The stuffing should be peas, cooked peas, and it should be in the bird.
I don't cook a whole bird. I don't. I don't cook a bird whole. I like I said, I.
You spatchcocks it.
No. I break it down. No, I don't even spatchcock it anymore. I break it fully down, and. The breast, the legs, the wings,
the liver,
the thighs, all that separate. And
I like heart. Chicken livers.
Take the temperature, you know, keep a monitor on the temperature on the pieces because they get done before one another.
Made shepherd's pie over the weekend and it was good. I need a different recipe though because it's kind of bland.
I gotta get going, guys. It's getting late.
All right, have a good one.
Mm-hmm.
Later.
Gotta stop the recording so I can get this file processed.
And I'd be eating Chex Mix.
You making some Chex Mix?
Yeah, I went through 2 boxes of the triple boxes that Sam's Club sells already.
Oh, that's cool.
Well, the easiest way to do it now is if you have Ubuntu installed is to do the Ubuntu Studio, and that'll pull in
right.
Like, the low latency kernel, or pull in the jack front end, you know, there's a mixer also, and it just makes it much easier. This looks real nice, this Behringer, the Euphoria. One on the Linux Musicians forum, and the people were talking highly about them. I was just going to get the 2 channel, but they discontinued it. So I wound up getting the 4 one, which is okay. Mm-hmm. I can run a mic, I can run guitar, stereo, bass at the same time.
Yep.
I'll be right back.
Mm-hmm.
Quarter pound of meat in his mouth.
Haven't heard that one in a while.
Not tonight. Had McDonald's. And the only reason that was because we had to take my cat to the vet for a booster shot.
Somebody's taking a shower again.
Yeah, they're in the fountain.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so all I need is some decent headphones. I'll be set.
Mm-hmm.
See what's on sale on Black Friday.
Now, you keep seeing this Kickstarter for an EpoMaker GK96S. Have you seen that, Joe?
No.
What is that?
Make your own keyboard.
Oh, that's cool.
Can you hear me?
We can hear
yes.
you.
Yes.
Okay.
You said a GK91 6S?
No, GK96S.
90.
EpoMaker. EpoMaker.
Okay, I see it. Bluetooth mechanical keyboard.
Yep.
It looks like mine.
Kind of does, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Mechanical keys. Click keys.
Hot swappable. It looks like mine, except this one has a numpad and mine doesn't.
And it's on the left-hand side.
Oh, no, no. Not all of them. It has right-hand side and left-hand side.
Yeah, I was going to say you can order whichever side you want, yeah.
Testing 1, 2.
I do have something to talk about and a couple things, probably.
Well, I can talk about this audio stuff. So
yep. Mine's going to be like the random posts that I'll see on the Raspberry Pi, Facebook group. Several in mind.
How much is this? I'm looking for the price and I'm not seeing it.
It says $69 on Kickstarter.
That's not a bad price for a Bluetooth mechanical keyboard.
Right.
With hot swap switches.
But they raised $176,000. So.
18 days to go. $10,000 goal. They weren't planning on selling that much.
Nope.
You can back it, but it's going to take a while to.
I won't say, yeah. Now, you see that? That's where I'm, like, looking at for either my iPad, which is yet to get here yet. That's what happens when you order the new one. You have to wait for it. Or my wife's is trying to find one of the keyboard. I don't want to pay what they want for the keyboard cases because they're ridiculous.
Yeah. Basically any DIY that you're buying firsthand is going to be atrociously expensive. This GK96 is
not
probably going to be your best bet.
Though.
Huh?
Not Apple expensive.
A lot of your custom keyboards sit in, if you're doing it all yourself and buying all the parts, you're looking in like the $200 to $300 range.
Right. Now, I do have a Logitech, not the K400, but there's a Bluetooth one that has the dial on the side that can do up to 3 devices and can do a PC.
Oh, yeah.
Or, yeah, that I forget which one. It actually has a groove for you
yeah,
to stick.
Yeah, I have that same one.
Yep.
But
it's Bluetooth though, which yeah, there is a little bit of lag sometimes when you're typing with Bluetooth.
Definitely not mechanical. Very,
no,
very chiclet.
No. Yeah, yeah. It's mushy keyboard.
But, I like
yeah.
my DOS keyboard. It's clickety enough for me.
You got the DOS keyboard without the keycaps printed?
No, I'm not that good.
I'm not either.
I know how to touch type. That's like one of the few skills from high school that actually.
They probably don't even teach that anymore in high school.
I don't know, but it was actually a very good class, and it's a skill that I learned that I use every day of my life.
I can't imagine not being able to type. That would.
Touch type.
Yeah. You put your index fingers on the little dimples on the keyboard. And
I can type, but I am hunting pecker, so.
It depends on how I'm feeling that day. Some days I can just, you know, watch the screen as I'm typing and hold another conversation at the same time that I'm typing about something else entirely. And then some days I have to watch my fingers each time.
And with me, it just depends on what I'm doing.
But that is a really good price, especially since they're including the Gatorons and letting you pick blue, red, or brown. Mm-hmm. Blue, red, brown, or black.
I kind of would like to build a wood grain PC.
It'll be expensive.
Oh, I know.
And it comes with the keycaps. That's a steal at $69.
I did move my Ubuntu Pi over by my desk now, so there is that.
Ooh. But then it's another $22 for shipping, so it comes out to $91 total.
It's not horrible for something you have to put assemble yourself.
Yeah, it's still not horrible.
We should start the show, shouldn't we?
We should. Man.
Since we're actually talking about tech.
Yes. Yeah. Don't waste it on three shows, though. Hold on. I apologize. My heater is going off again.
I can't hear it.
I can.